You're listening to the official podcast of Asbury University, produced by students with God-honoring conversations that inform, edify, and encourage. This is Asbury. We explore culture and current topics through a Christian worldview, promoting a well-balanced life, and we empower our community to belong, become, and be set apart. I'm your host, Abby Laub. Welcome to This is Asbury. I'm joined in the studio today by a special guest, Jay McCord. Jay is a familiar face around campus because he's married to my boss. So that's fun. Jay is a trainer, a consultant, a coach. He helps professionals lead and communicate more effectively in the workplace. And one of the ways that he does that is by helping people understand generations and generational differences. So that is the topic we are going to explore today on the podcast. I think it's really interesting in a university setting for people who are working with students and just for parents or educators who are trying to understand their student, understand Gen Z. Jay can shed a lot of light onto a lot of those issues that we face in a multi-generational workplace. Can you tell me a little bit about what you do?
Yeah, I get the great privilege of speaking and leading all leaders and teams across every industry sector globally on how to navigate the 8-second attention span / multi-generational workplace. The fact we have the lowest attention spans in history, 8 seconds or less, and the fact that we have now up to 5 separate generations in a workplace create unique challenges that whether you're in business, government, education, nonprofit world, folks don't know what to do. So yeah. I get the great privilege of going in and helping people learn new skills in leadership, communication, in those specific areas. Yeah.
Well, it's helped us tremendously at Asbury. We know how to craft certain messages to specific generations. And you gave this really cool elevator speech about the differences in each of these generations. Can you just kind of run down those, starting with the traditionalists and just kind of where we are today?
I've been talking on this for 20 years. God, about 2 years ago, had me start to tighten this thing down to where people could remember it and have a tool much like a Swiss Army knife where you could just walk out and have this and be able to connect to anyone. So there are 5 generations. What God gave me was 5 words, 1 word per. So traditionals born roughly before 1946, these folks, the word is rules. They love and appreciate rules and structure. So when you're working with them, you always want to remember that's the important piece to them. Boomers born roughly between 46 and 66, their word is legacy. Baby boomers, Abby, are retiring at the rate of 10,000 a day, and that will happen for the next 15 years. And so that's radically shifting the workplace. And so legacy matters to this demographic. They've worked a long time, done a lot of things, and they want their work to have mattered. They want their lives to have mattered. Gen X is next. My generation, those of us born roughly between 1966 and 1981, we're the smallest generation as far as per capita, and we're sandwiched between this monster generation of boomers and this monster generation of millennials. But yet, we are the largest generation in leadership right now. The word for us is level. We want to go to the next level in our personal lives or our professional lives, and so that's the very important piece to us. Millennials, those of you all born between 1981 and 2000, have now become the largest generation in the workplace and the largest generation on the planet.
Go millennials.
Right. See, mortality caught boomers, sorry. But millennials are the largest demographic out there. And millennials' word is the word impact. They want to have impact. They want it now. God has uniquely wired them to have this kind of change the world mentality. And then Gen Z, those born roughly between 2000 and 2015, these are our current students at Asbury and will be for the next basically 10 years. Their word is customize. Everything in their world can be customized to them as the individual, and that's what they're seeking most is that individualized, customized experience. So Swiss Army knife, real quick. Traditionals, rules. Boomers, legacy. Gen X is level, millennials is impact, and Gen Z is customized. If you can remember those 5 words and then think about the person or the people that are in front of you, and you start to make your pitches or your management meetings or your incentive programs around that word, you're going to connect so much better.
Once your eyes have kind of been opened to these words, it's crazy. I see it everywhere. One area where we're seeing this right now that is becoming a problem is there are, you know, you mentioned there's 10,000 boomers retiring per day.
Every day.
That's a staggering amount. There's this huge, you know, wealth transfer, this huge transfer of the workplace happening. But meanwhile, Gen Z, they're like, I want everything customized. You know, I saw this article just the other day. It was talking about how manufacturers and these traditional roles that, you know, a lot of boomers maybe, you know, took great pride in. Like, my grandparents did jobs like this, and there's so much pride they had in that work. And now Gen Z is like, eh, you know, maybe I'll do that tomorrow, but today I want to do something else. And so employers are recognizing this, and they're creating apps where you can go work at the plant for a day and you can sign up via the app. It's like, how is that going to work? That's going to be such a dramatic change in everything from workforce to finances. It's going to impact everything. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, it is. And what I do with leadership teams and leaders in this area is we talk about with Gen Z and this customized piece, you can't customize everything.
No.
You'll lose your mind, right? And it is kind of ridiculous for folks to expect that or not to expect it from them because this is the world they grew up in. So what we tell them to do is take two buckets. First bucket is put every single thing that cannot be changed, either because it's a law, OSHA says, hey, it's got to be this way, whatever. Put it all into that bucket. Everything else could possibly be customized. Yeah. And what you want to do is you start to hire Gen Z, you want to share with them the buckets. Mm-hmm. And you got to tell them up front, these are the things that can't be changed. But the most important thing, Abby, you have to do with these guys is you got to give them the why. Mm-hmm. You cannot say because I said so, or it's just because we do that or whatever. These guys are not afraid to work, which I know sounds crazy because everybody's like, oh, they don't want to work. No. They want to work, but they want to work on the things that they want to work on, and they need to know the why. Mm-hmm. This is where schools really fall down is, well, you got to take this accounting class and you got to do this theory, this, that, and the other. And teachers are not saying, here's why that's important to the workplace. And so they just see it as meaningless and they don't want to do it. So the buckets are important. Take everything that is non-negotiable. You can't change it because it's a law or whatever. Explain to them.
Yeah.
That's the situation.
Be very upfront.
Yeah. And then everything else can be, you need to look at it and you need to be willing to say, can we customize this? So, for example, real quick on that, we know that the average student loan debt, undergrad debt, is $40,000 per kid right now. If you're in vet school, I do a lot of work with veterinarians across the country, specifically equine vets, but vet schools across the country, average student loan debt of a vet is
$180,000. Wow.
I was with a girl from University of Arizona a few weeks ago, and she will graduate with $400,000 worth of debt.
Oh.
Right. And starting salary of an equine vet is $60,000 to $70,000. So guess what? You can't get there from here. Okay. So let's say you're an employer and you've got someone with $40,000 worth of debt or $400,000, doesn't matter, crushing student loan debt. And let's say that you have a matching program for your 401k. Hey, we give a dollar for every dollar you put in, up to 6%, whatever that might be. Okay, so you're putting hard dollars towards that. Well, what if you said, you, the employee, can choose whether we put our dollar into your 401k or a dollar to match you for your student loan repayment. If student loan repayment's the number one thing for these guys, what difference does it make for you, the employer, that you spend a buck here or a buck there? That's what I mean by put things in a bucket. This cannot be changed. But guess what? Your benefits plan, there are some areas there where you can actually change those things around and make them more customizable.
Yeah.
And make yourself much more appealing to this group. But the last thing I'd say to that is, as an employer, if you are an employer, you're trying to attract and retain top Gen Z talent, the number one thing you've got to do is show them the customizable experience that they can have while working with you. And you got to give them the why.
You mentioned something before, Gen Z knows how to work really hard. They do. It's absolutely true. And I just think it's funny because I'm an old millennial. I'm barely a millennial. But I remember people always talking about millennials just being lazy and entitled. And I'm like, oh my gosh, like, no. Obviously, these are generalizations. Can you talk about why that happens? Is it a pride thing? Does each generation just kind of think, I did it the best and you guys are all lazy? Where does
that come
from?
My dad is 88 years old. He's still working.
Yep.
And he talks about how the older generation, when he came in, said similar things. Gen X, my generation. I don't know if you even know where the term Gen X comes from, but it came from a Douglas Copeland novel in 1991 called Gen X. And he was describing this generation that had no purpose, no direction, no common history, and no galvanizing moment like a John F. Kennedy being shot
or like
Martin Luther King. Yeah. They didn't have that. So we didn't have that. So that's all I heard growing up. Yeah. You know, lazy, blah, 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 blah. So I think there's something intrinsic about older folks looking at younger folks and saying they don't work like I do.
Yeah. It's now, human nature to think you do something the best.
But here's what I would challenge every listener right now. What is work? One of the things that we need to understand in our workplace today is, are we really trying to get work done? And if so, what difference does it make how we get it done? Now, I'm not talking about an excellence or, you know, quality. You definitely want to do it with excellence and quality. But if the job is to get from point A to point B, then does it matter if we get there in 3 minutes or 3 hours? And the example, Abby, I'd use for you is if I said, okay, Abby, I'm going to hire you to move this mound of dirt from this side of the parking lot to this side of the parking lot. And I know it's going to take you about 40 hours this week. And I sit and I watch you move that for 40 hours. And, man, you are sweating. You are moving rocks and dirt. And you're working so hard. Let's replace that. I pay you for that 40 hours. But let's replace that with a scenario where you find a way to move that dirt from there to there in 3 hours. Mm-hmm. Am I going to pay you for a 40-hour week? No,
question.
I'm not. Because I'm going to give you more work to do. The challenges to listeners is we have to really define what is work and what do we mean by getting it done. Mm-hmm. And done with excellence. And if there are ways to do it more efficiently or better or in newer ways that younger people can see, here's what I want you to understand. I really believe that Gen Z is going to make a difference through their work. Specifically, what I mean by that is I think it's a Joseph generation. When Joseph goes to Egypt, he doesn't have a Bible study. He doesn't have a church. He doesn't have a support group. It's him by himself, him and God. But he always distinguished himself by how hard he worked and the excellence he did things with for his employers. So he had jobs that he didn't like. He was managing the house at Potiphar. He was sweeping a prison cell. But he showed up, and he showed up with a good attitude, and he did it better than anybody else. And what that earned him was a shot at the CEO, solving the CEO's problem, Pharaoh's problem. And when he did that, he got the job. But here's what's interesting is even in that job, which was so far over his head, he did it with excellence. He showed up every day. I think that Gen Z, the disservice we've done to them is we haven't told them why work matters, that there is tremendous joy in work, in the work of your hands, even if it's a dirty job. What I would challenge folks of all ages, but especially Gen Z, is if you got to sweep the job, go sweep better than anybody else, because that will earn you what you want most, which is your voice. All of them want to be seen and heard. They want to use technology so that everybody knows what they're thinking and seeing and saying. But I think that the way you differentiate yourself today is in your work, because the workplace right now, Abby, is pretty freaking hostile about nobody wants to work. I see employers all the time so frustrated. Nobody wants to work. I can't find anybody, this, that, and the other. Well, what that tells me is if you show up to work on time, sober, gets you ahead of most people right now. But that's my challenge to folks is, what is work? And then go do that work better than anybody else around you. And then you'll earn what you really want, not only monetarily, but you'll earn your voice.
Right. Well, and it's just character building. You know, you need to, like, defer the spirit, you know, patience. And it's like, okay, you can't just immediately get what you want in any area in life, work or otherwise.
You can speed almost everything up today with technology. Mm-hmm. Almost. There are two things you can never speed up, no matter how much tech you have. Relationships and job skills.
Yep.
Those take time. So I would say that when people are frustrated that they're not where they want to be, it's either because you don't know the right person yet, or they don't know you. You don't have that relationship yet, but you will. Or you just don't have the skill set yet to do the job, but you will. I've found that if you can take the pressure off of younger people by letting them know that, hey, relationships and job skills take a while. Go sweep the floor over here, because you're learning a skill. Not the sweep the floor skill. You're learning other things because you're in that space.
That just comes with time. And that's an area I always encourage my student workers in their office here at Asbury. It's like, you're probably going to have some terrible jobs. Just expect to have some terrible jobs. But it's just going to be so fun, you know, once you get a little older and you can look back on your journey and just think, wow, okay, God had me there. And then he had me there. And it just starts to make sense. But it just takes time. And I think we just need to encourage these students just to be okay with where you are, and it will get better.
Do it with excellence.
Do your best, and it'll get better.
and that you will get a crack at what you want to do, but it's going to take other people, those relationships, and it's going to take skills that you don't have yet. So where are you going to learn those? Well, why not get paid sweeping somewhere to learn some skills?
Yeah. And don't be afraid to ask. Your generation is a great example. Like, you know, you like to level up. You like to, you know, make things better. And then my generation, you know, wanting to make an impact, find someone who's younger and help them in their career.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. If you weren't living under a rock, you saw this word quiet quitting. Mm-hmm. What does quiet quitting mean, and why is it happening?
Quiet quitting is just when people walk off the job.
Yeah.
And they don't tell you why, and they don't tell you that we're leaving or give a 2 weeks' notice. I think we've gotten to a place where professional courtesy almost doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah.
Now, there's a couple of reasons why that is. I think part of it is because the workplace has really banged people up severely. Prior to COVID, I believe the workplace held the upper hand. Hey, look, you want a job, you got to yield to us. COVID changed that because so many people were incentivized not to work. So many people's jobs got lost. They lost their savings, yeah. These type of things. Believe the stat is, Abby, that there were 50 plus million jobs that disappeared and have not come back. So the workforce is not there. It's not like, oh, okay, well, I'll just throw this job out there and people are going to come back. Employees hold the cards. So therefore, if I don't like this job or I don't like something about it, then I'll just leave it. I also believe you really are burning bridges that you shouldn't. Quiet quitting is, I'm not going to give you the professional courtesy to say, Abby, here's why I don't want to work here anymore. Here's what I'm doing. Part of that also is a younger generation has been insulated and isolated using technology. And so I don't have to deal with you eyeball to eyeball.
I can just
send you a text or not just show up.
And exactly.
So what? So I think that technology has given us a barrier that allows us to quiet quit.
Yeah.
I hate it because it's so not professional. It burns relationships to the ground. You're going to need that person at some point in time. My thing has always been, leave the place better than you found it, and you need to learn something that allows you to go to another level, go to that next level of your career while you're at that place. And even if you have a terrible experience, I mean, and we all have had terrible experiences, there are circumstances and bosses and places that are not ideal, but your job is not to look for the ideal, because you'll never find that. There's always something you're not going to like. But quiet quitting is an unfortunate thing, and it is a thing. Quiet quitting is a sign of disengagement with your employees. If they can walk off the job and not even tell you, then they were disengaged long before that moment. And you've got to look at yourself and the organization and say, how did that happen where that person was so disengaged they didn't even bother to tell me they were going to leave? What can we do to make sure that that doesn't happen?
Obviously, this is a big problem where, you know, both employees and employers are sort of ships in the night. They're just missing each other. Do you see any correlation between these workforce trends with quiet quitting and what's happening in the church?
Same.
So let's talk about that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's an organization. It's an institution that has rules to play by, and this is how we do things and so forth and so on. And folks are saying, you know what, I don't think that's what it's about. Or the flip side of that is, that doesn't meet my needs, but I didn't even tell you what my needs were. So the key piece is the word disengagement. So if you're seeing quiet quitting in any form, whether it's in the workplace or in church or wherever, it is a sign that there was disengagement at some point that wasn't addressed. Disengagement is a fancy term for relationship. It means that you didn't have a relationship with that person at a level you should have. We're so busy trying to get work done, and we need people to do things. So we've got to find this balance, because we're trying to get work done and then people quit. Well, we can't get the work done. Now it puts more pressure. And it's this vicious cycle. What I would encourage folks to do is get to know people at a deeper level where you can have the hard conversation. Hey, Abby, you're not getting the job done. Here's what I need you to be doing. Here's why that's important. Look somebody eyeball to eyeball in that. People don't want to do it. I mean, who wants to do that?
Right.
I hate
it's
having
intimidating.
Those conversations.
Yeah.
Right. But that's what we need to be doing. There needs to be a higher level of engagement with employers and employees, and a higher level of respect.
I think another issue that I see, and that you probably see with all this, is it's also a worldview issue. You know, if you're in, you know, traditional or boomer or Gen X or even millennial, you just have a kind of a basic understanding of, like, well, this is right and this is wrong. Like, it's probably wrong to just ditch my employer, you know, but we're not necessarily operating out of the same truth anymore. So how does that play into this and what can be done?
Yeah, so let's walk it back and let's put COVID as an overlay. These Gen Z kids went through COVID while they were in school at some point, college, high school, middle school. So think about it, the perspective they have. You had all these adults in your life.
It's like the Wild West.
Right? Saying, here's what we want you to do. We want you to go to this class virtually, and then we've got this portal, and you need to do this. But you have one teacher that says, no, no, no. You want to email all this stuff in, and no, 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 we're not going to accept that.
Ugh.
And so they almost sit back. I watch them sit back and go, you know what, adults, when you all get it together.
Yeah, just let me know.
Why don't you just let me know? Because the futility of the efforts, we look like a bunch of idiots running around saying, no, 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 we're going to do it this way. No, 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 we're going to do it this way. So I think part of the worldview that you're talking about is what is right and wrong? Mm-hmm. Because people can't articulate that.
Yeah.
So I think you got to walk these things back to more of a headwater issue. And I think that's part of what's happening with these guys.
Definitely. So last question, Jay, how do you successfully intermingle workers from different generations to create a successful work environment? You kind of touched on this in the beginning, but give us some practical tips in closing.
I think it looks like a salad bar versus a salad bowl. So if you go to a salad bar, let's say at some huge place like a Golden Corral, it looks like it has a ton of diversity on it. Until you look at that salad bar very closely and you realize all the onions are with the onions, the lettuce is with the lettuce, tomatoes with the tomatoes. Everything is in like kind bowls. It's not until you put it into a salad bowl and mix those things up that it has any flavor to it. Everything else is flavorless because it's the samey same. So what I would challenge folks to do is create salad bowl experiences where you put different generations together for common type things. I mean, here's the crazy one. My dad is 88 and his boss is 38.
Oh, wow.
My dad is 50 years older than his boss. They have the greatest relationship.
That's awesome.
And so there's a richness there, but you have to have a common purpose. You can't just isolate because you don't understand and so forth. What I love to do are create these salad bowl experiences in an organization, bring everybody together and ask them questions that have tremendous commonality and contrast. Mm-hmm. So for example, hey, why did you come to work for this organization? And you ask the oldest person in the room and the youngest person in the room, and they start realizing, oh my gosh, it's kind of for the same reasons potentially. And then you ask contrast questions like, hey, how did we used to get this process done when you first started, John, who's 88?
Yeah.
And he starts talking about some arcane paper product process that makes all the young people go, that must have been really hard.
Yeah.
Wow. So I think my solution to that is you want to create salad bowl experiences, put people together in a place where they can learn from each other and benefit, not just be in a space where they're like, oh, gosh, look how different we all are. And that takes some finesse. It takes some calories to do it. But that's how you really create an intergenerational space. Oh, wait, that works for the church, too.
Yes.
Doesn't it, right. But look how we segment Sundays.
Oh,
traditional
gosh.
Service, 8:30, contemporary service, 10 o'clock. We try to segment everybody versus finding those opportunities to create salad bowls.
Yeah. And I just think, you know, in our families and our home lives, really just until very recently, we did live in these intergenerational family communities, and that's also lost. And then you see that in parenting, you know, like parents are more frazzled than ever because they don't have that support system. So it touches every area of our lives. So I think it's so fascinating. So I would definitely encourage listeners to just take some time to think through that and just understand these principles a bit. Jay, where can people find you?
Just McCordInc.com, McCHORD.com. You can just type in jmccord@gmail.com and send me something as well.
Well, thank you so much for joining us for this episode of This is Asbury. To learn more about Asbury University, visit asbury.edu.